Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach from anywhere in the world on kx93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. Right now, here's the Importance of Being podcast on KX93.5. Okay, this is KX93.5. You're listening to the Importance of Being show. We'll be back in just a bit with to get the show started. So here we go.
Exits along the road, there'll be so many ways to go, but I'll stick to it. Oh, I swear. Oh, I swear. I know you have a little life.
Okay, we're back. This is KX93.5, and you are listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Saturday morning from 8 to 9. And today I have as my guest Steve Toth and Aaron Almond. And we are here to talk about Haiti today, right?
Yes.
Good morning.
At least I got that right. Okay, good morning. So what exactly are you two up to in Haiti?
Well, after the January 12th, 2010 earthquake in Port-au-Prince, it killed a quarter of a million people, and there were 70,000 or more traumatic amputations. Stephen,
oh my gosh,
really wanted to go to Haiti and help out because he's an orthopedic technician and surgical assistant at that time. And so
you did.
So, yeah. You tell her.
I wanted to go. I tried a couple of different avenues to get there right after the earthquake, and neither one of those avenues would take Aaron, who's non-medical. So I ended up meeting a guy at an orthotech symposium. His name's Billy Abril.
There you go. Can you get just a little bit on that?
Yeah, his name's Billy Abril, and he has a nonprofit called Phoenix Rising for Haiti.
Okay.
And so he came and spoke to us about going and volunteering, and I was the first one to sign up, said, yeah, that's my thing. I want to go. And so the first trip, and I asked him, can Aaron go along? He said, oh, absolutely.
we'll take all comers.
Yeah, we need all the help we can get. So we ended up going up to a little town in the northwest of Haiti called Saint Louis du Nord to a little mission called the Northwest Haiti Christian Mission.
Okay.
With a whole group of orthopedic people and prosthetists and people who do, you know, prosthetics.
Right.
And so I went specifically as a surgical assistant to assist the orthopedic surgeon there. And
this was October of 2010.
Yes.
So not too long after the earthquake.
10 months after, there's still a lot of destruction in Port-au-Prince.
Sure.
And the area we went to didn't have a lot of destruction or anything, or even any.
Yeah, they didn't feel
but
it.
But just like with Hurricane Katrina and New Orleans, after the earthquake, everybody just left town.
Right, and so everything's disrupted. There's no,
right.
None of the normal cycles are running, right?
Exactly. So there were a lot of people there who were injured in this little town of Port-au-Prince. And gotta remember the microphone.
Thank you, Aaron. Yes, thank you for that. I know, right?
My head.
If you want to wander, you can grab the mic and roll with it.
Okay. All right. No, I'll do my best to stay right here. Keep my nose on the
nose to the grindstone.
Nose to the grindstone. Yeah. So, anyways, we ended up going for a week, and it was an experience that changed us dramatically. And we actually decided we wanted to go back, so we went back six months later.
We just sped past, changed us dramatically.
Oh. Yeah.
Somehow I think that there's something in there. So, Aaron, what changed for you?
Well, before we went to Haiti, I was kind of worried about things like not having granite countertops. Like, really, I really wanted to be, you know, have granite
so, like,
countertops.
Orange County,
yes,
problems.
And, you know, our kitchen was built back in the 50s, and it's so old. And, you know, I would kind of stress out about these things. And I'm not trying to make light of your concerns. And, you know, we went to Haiti, and there's just all these kids all over the street begging and trying to sell these little hand-woven bracelets for a dollar. And they ask you for your name. And if you give them your name, you have ordered a bracelet and you're responsible to pay them the dollar. And they all speak a little bit of English, as in blanc, which means foreigner, or white. But
right.
Even if you're a foreign black man, you would be called blanc. It's basically foreign. And they would say, blanc, you got my dollar? Like, you know, you so.
Right.
Just, we met some of these kids on the street, and they're out there fishing for an American to possibly pay for their school. In Haiti, there is some public schooling, but they call it it's known as the lottery school, because basically you got to win the lottery to get a place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not free. They still have to pay. It's not as expensive as the rest of the schools, which 90% of all the schools in Haiti are private.
Okay.
And they're $30 to $60 a month, and you have to buy uniforms and books and access online some of the lessons, and so you'd have to pay for an internet cafe.
And so before the earthquake, that was a tough stretch,
yes,
for most families, outside,
yes,
of the realm of most families.
I think the earthquake was actually good for Haiti in that it brought everyone's eyes to focus on Haiti, but the earthquake was not the greatest problem. The greatest problem is the poverty. And there's a lot of reasons for that. A lot of people just blame the Haitians, and that's really kind of unfair.
Okay.
There's a couple of wonderful books out there that everyone should read. I'm going to name three. One is called Mountains Beyond Mountains, and it's about a doctor named Paul Farmer, who's spent much time in Haiti, and he's one of the world-renowned authorities on tuberculosis. And the other book is Haiti After the Quake, and that's written by Paul Farmer. And the other book is Miracle on Voodoo Mountain, and that's about a young American woman who felt led to go to Haiti after the earthquake and her adventures after she moved there, and she is still there.
So for people who want to get the backstory,
yes,
and
to
really
understand
what's going on
Haiti
on the ground.
Why, yeah. Understand then, why they're...
That's your homework assignment.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're wonderful reads. I mean, just, you know, just exciting. And so our first visit, Steve assisted the doctor in a clubfoot repair,
okay,
on a tiny little baby. One foot had to be amputated, and they were able to just Stephen and the doctor with a fly swatter in this makeshift operating room.
Yeah.
Completely turned the foot around, and we've watched this boy now over the years and have video of him now running down the street with a little prosthetic foot on the amputated foot, mm-hmm. but able to run and kick the ball with his friends. And that's an amazing feeling. On our second trip in April of 2011, it really hit both of us so drastically, the condition of the kids, and realizing that in this area, only 20% can afford to go to school. That means 80% of all children there are illiterate. They're put to work. There's only one form of birth control in Haiti, which is legal, and it's not financially accessible to 90% of the people who live there. So, okay. So subsequently, they have more children than they can feed.
Mm, yeah.
You know, and it's not fair to tell them, oh, well, don't have sex. You know, we take that for granted here in America. We can have as much sex as we want, and there's so many forms of birth control. We can choose how many children we have. And, you know, if we don't want to get pregnant,
when we're prepared to start that process,
Mm-hmm. So, what happens is, in most very, very poor countries like Haiti, they end up giving or selling a child, one of their children or multiple children, to other families that might have more money and, in their minds, be able to send them to school and give them food and have a roof over their head.
Provide
a better environment. Unfortunately, there is no overseeing of what happens to these kids.
So no social services.
No social services, no check. The kids are at the mercy of the people with whom they're placed. And they sell whips in the market, twists of hard rawhide, to beat your child servant. They're called Restavec. And I'm actually in the middle of writing a book right now called Restavec. And hopefully it'll be done soon. In that April, I was specifically crying every night in our tent and begging God to please let me help these children. We'd gone to their homes.
We met.
So that's a good point to take a break. When we come back, we'll tap into that story. And all right, so this is KX93.5. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show. We do this show live every Saturday morning from 8 to 9. Today, my guests are Steve Toth and Aaron Almond, and they are working in Haiti. And this is KX93.5. Uh-oh. Okay, there we go.
Lost his guys of powdered gold, caught in clouds of silver rose, showered by the empty hope as I tumbled
with it, 'cause I'm in this house, I'm in this hole, all my time.
Are back. This is KX 93.5, and you're listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Saturday morning from 8 to 9. And today I am glad to have as my guests Steve Toth and Aaron Almond. And they are, does it have a project name that you're doing?
Yeah. We eventually ended up opening a school, and it's called Living Water Christian School.
Okay. So when we, in the first segment, we talked about your first trip over, Steve's first trip, mm-hmm. and then wanting to find a charity or a program to go and help after the earthquake mm-hmm. that you, as a non-medical person, Aaron, could also participate in. And, but I forgot the part where, no, we're right. We're right. So you went then on the second trip.
Mm-hmm. She went on the first trip also.
Oh, okay.
She was on the first trip.
Oh, okay.
We both
okay.
went in October and then again the following April.
But you went as a medical technician, and there were lots of programs for that needed, were asking
right.
for
right.
those kinds of
right.
people. And as a non-medical person, Aaron, mm-hmm. there were less choices for you.
Yeah, a lot of the groups wanted only medical personnel. But right. I brought my sewing machine as my carry-on item and ended up working a lot on the sewing machine with the medical team, because they have to look through a pile of old braces to find something for a particular patient, and they needed a lot of sewing to take in braces, make them fit, put on Velcro. Helped with the prosthetics.
Okay. So,
I ended up working very much.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, I called trash and changed sheets and okay. helped with triage.
She was like the MVP of the whole thing, really, because she was the gopher. She did the sewing. She did the checking in of patients.
Yeah, so she's the make it work person.
Exactly.
Yeah, you guys are, this is what I can do. And
right.
and so you go over there, and you're not in Port-au-Prince, you're in the north.
On the north right. coast.
On the north
right
coast.
Right across the, from the island of Tortuga, which is the old pirate island.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I think that's
Tortuga.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah,
it's right across, you can see Tortuga from the city where we were.
I think they shot some of that over there on that island too.
Yeah, we've been over there a couple times now.
Okay.
It's beautiful.
So you go over there, and in that city, I forget the name, mm-hmm. but part of the problem was earthquake related, but most of the problem was poverty related.
Right.
Yeah. The north grew by about the northern cities like Port-au-Prince and San Luis del Norte, where we were.
That's it.
They both grew by 30% post-earthquake because
okay.
people fled. So there were a lot of earthquake victims,
okay.
as well as we would see a guy who's severely crippled. And I remember asking Steve, all right, what's that? And he's like, oh, he had a broken leg and never got it set.
Oh.
That's all. And now he's crippled for the rest of his life. So, and then we worked on a arm prosthetic, was the second visit, for a boy that was stuck in the rubble in Port-au-Prince in the earthquake for 9 days. And his mother was bringing him water. He had a huge 18-inch thick slab. His arm was all the way up to his shoulder, stuck between this slab, and people would come by and try to help with a stick, and but there was no jackhammers or emergency
heavy jacks or anything like that.
Right, and there are some estimates that say 300,000 were killed. So there were just it was terrible bodies everywhere. So this young mother who had this boy when she was 14. Was bringing him water, and after 9 days, he started to go into convulsions. So, in desperation, she found a piece of metal in the street and severed off his arm so that she could carry him to some place that could help.
Right.
And so we ended up making him an arm prosthetic.
Okay.
How it affected us, I think.
Yeah,
we appreciate the
right.
United
I think
States.
I think this was a question. This
this goes back to answering the first question I asked, the second question I asked you was, you know, how did this change you or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I realize now, like, I'm watering out in the front yard, and I look at the hose, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I can drink this water.
Right. Yeah.
And
that's not the case everywhere.
Right. And even a homeless person, if they get hit by a car, they're taken to the hospital and their leg is fixed.
Right.
When they want to go to the bathroom, even if they're homeless, they can find a place that has this nice little porcelain device with a little handle on it, and they don't have to worry about digging a hole and then watching it bubble up next to them next time it rains.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we take so much for granted, let alone, I mean, clean water, everything, like having waterways for the flood runoff to run out.
Right.
These are things that these people do not have. There's no place for them to go, like a CVS, to go get an aspirin or a Tylenol cold and flu packet. They do not have access to anything of these things. So they suffer
and
a lot.
And even if it was there, they don't have any money.
Right. Even if it was there. Like, it's a strange dichotomy. There's people driving around with Range Rovers on their iPhone 10s and wearing, you know, fancy watches and jewelry, and they live behind a gated community, mm-hmm. and have flat screens and full-time electricity, and they can get their dry cleaning done. And the rest of the people, the other 80% who have no work, 80% unemployment up in the north, mm. They see all of that, but they can't get access to it.
Okay. So you guys went down there on a couple of trips to do orthopedic type of support, right. To work with other organizations. So when did it morph into your own organization, and when did you decide we need to do more, or we need to do something different?
So what happened was during our second trip, seeing all these kids, and we got to know some of them quite well, and going to their house and stuff, and Aaron would spend basically every night in our tent, because that's where we stayed, in a tent on the roof of the building, praying and just crying and asking God, help me do more. Help me.
Right.
I want to help these people and these kids. So she kind of, in the back of her mind, she had a little itch about starting a school. I mean, that's kind of what started it. Sorry, my mouth is wandering.
You're missing all, we're missing some of these precious jewels. There we go.
All right, sorry.
That's it.
Okay, so when we got back, we continued to pray, and you know, we were changed dramatically. We're just going, we have to do more. So she led a retirement community, a little fellowship at a retirement community, where she was helping one of her former clients. And she would just go back and tell them the stories of, you know, when we went to Haiti and everything. And they just loved that. And so she had mentioned that, oh, you know, I'm thinking I'd like to start a school. But
she probably wasn't saying it the way I would say it. Please talk me out of it would be what.
Yeah. Yeah, well, now we say that afterwards. Yeah. No, it's not true. But at any rate, and we, one of our interpreters we got very close with, her name is Monine, and she married a man named Johnson Blanc.
A Haitian
man.
Yeah.
So these are all Haitians. And she had mentioned to Monine, I think it was in an email.
Right. So after the April 2011 visit, the following July, we had met some 16-year-old and his siblings and another boy, and we wanted to help them go to school, to their Haitian schools. We didn't realize how much it was going to cost, but and we did so, but I really wanted the money to go directly to the school. I didn't want to mail it to the kids because I was afraid maybe they'll use it for food or clothes or who knows what. So
right.
I started emailing with Monine and asked her if she would mind driving. She lives in Port-au-Prince, and I asked her, you know, was it too far? Would you mind driving up to Port San Luis de Norte to pay for the school for these kids? And she was, oh, God, she was so, you know, just praised us so much for wanting to help them. And she said, I'll do anything you want. And during one of those emails or in 2011, I mentioned that, you know, I felt like God was maybe telling me to open a school. And at that same time, I was leading this Christian fellowship group at a retirement home. And they, some of them had been to Haiti. And when I mentioned that, I was thinking about maybe starting a school. And they were like, oh, that's such a great idea. And then the next week, two of them handed me checks for $500.
Oh, so you're in business.
So, right. It was like instantly, yeah. I was like, what?
I was just talking about that.
Yeah, I was just talking about it. And from the moment that I spoke the words.
Oh, it became it a thing.
It was either 14 or 16 weeks, the doors were open.
Oh, my gosh.
When I told Monine that I had $1,000, she said, oh, mail it to me. I found a house. It's $2,000 for the year. It would be perfect. So she sent, you know, emailed me photos. And we went to our church and asked if they would take this on as one of their missions and come up with the other $1,000 for the rent for the year and, you know, help us. So.
And they said, did. No, get out. Don't come
no.
back.
No.
They said, absolutely.
They voted on it, and they all pitched in, and, you know, we were able to get up in front of the church and invite people to help, and it just has blossomed. We sent a crier through the village in the back of a truck because there's no electricity,
yep.
And a lot of them don't read. So they just had a big megaphone going, you know, free school for the poor. If you've never been to school before, you know, come to this school on Merriam Street at, you know, 8 o'clock on Saturday morning. And we had over 100 kids show up, and the criteria stopping me.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. I want to let the audience know that this is KX93.5 and that they're listening to the Importance of Being show. And that today my guests are Steve Toth and Aaron
Almond.
Yeah. And what again is the name of your
Living Water Christian School in Haiti.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is KX93.5, and here you go.
There was this kid who got into an accident and couldn't come to school. But when he finally came back, his hair had turned from black into bright white. He said that it was from when the cousin smashed his soul. We'll
Moses' boyhoods. Parents made him come directly home right after school. And when they went to their church, they shook and lurched all over the church floor. He couldn't quite explain it. They'd always just gone there.
Okay, we're back. This is KX93.5, and you're listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Saturday morning from 8 to 9. Today, I am happy to have as my guests Stephen Toth and Aaron Almond, and they are running a school in Haiti. And so when we left off, you had, or to bridge the conversation, in the first segment, we talked about your first trips down to Haiti and after the earthquake and trying to help with orthopedic missions, prosthetics and such. Mm-hmm. Then you had an inspiration and it stuck with you and you decided to build your own school. So you've raised the $2,000. You've got a guy on a truck with a megaphone saying free school for poor kids. What happens after that?
So we had over 100.
Mm-hmm. 102, I think, was the first class.
And the criteria was that the children could never have attended school before because we did not want to get kids who were attending other schools and think, oh, yeah, we can get it for free over here.
Right.
So it was amazing how many children were over 10. I mean, we had 12 and 13-year-old kids coming to go to school for the first time. And so 16 weeks, I think it was, from the time that I first spoke the words, the doors were open. Monine and Johnson became the directors of our school. They mm-hmm. did all the hiring. They are our angels. Without them, we could not have done this.
Okay.
They have spent a lot of their own money to do all the little things that we never hear about that need to be done at the school. Each year, we added one grade level.
Yes. Okay.
And hired an additional teacher. In Haiti, just as in the United States, after sixth grade, you have to have a different professor for each subject.
Okay.
So, we decided, too, that we wanted to tie our school in with the National Haitian Education System.
So it's aligned.
So that the kids would have valid degrees and education when
they graduate. So one quick question. So you start off with that first 100 kids. They're not all mm-hmm. the same age. Are they in the same grade together?
We put the older kids in grade 2.
Okay.
And the younger ones in, we did kindergarten, first and second grade at the beginning. You know, there were 13-year-old girls and boys in the second grade.
Right.
So, you know, just to give them a little bit of self-esteem or whatever. Well, even though they were all starting from scratch.
Sure, sure. But they are different ages. And,
right.
And they have different things kind of going on. Life
maturity level.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And it's not as much of a pressure in Haiti as it is here to be the same age or the same size in a particular grade. All the schools have kids from in the same grade that might have a wide range of ages. So even currently, it was sixth grade or fifth grade, we have 17-year-old kids.
Okay.
Because in Haiti, all the schools are private and only 20% can afford to go to school, sometimes the kid, they'll be able to get a year of school in and then the family can't afford it for 2 years.
Jump back in.
Right, and then they'll jump back in. So
so you aligned your curriculum and your standards to the national standards.
Correct, because we want them, you know, to be able to have a degree in the country in which they live. And so they learn...
In school, they learn English, French. Of course, there's mathematics, you know, some history. And also that there is a part of the English is Bible, you know.
Oh,
so
sure.
They have some
Bible.
Yeah,
it's a Christian school, right?
But, you know, we're not like.
That's optional, too.
Yeah.
We don't proselytize the kids at the school.
That was one of the things for getting our nonprofit status was. You know, that we don't discriminate.
You have to put a
non-discrimination clause in your mandate,
okay.
You know, your mission statement.
The normal...
So, and that's kind of right down your alley. I mean, you're not there as a missionary.
Right.
You were there because you couldn't sleep at night not doing something. So.
Right.
The normal Haitian education requirements include Haitian Creole, which is the language of Haiti. And then if you are an educated Haitian, you speak French fluently. And you're looked down on in Haiti if you don't speak French. English, they learn as an extra bonus. That's not included in the requirements of the National Haitian Education System. So our school is really, we have a waiting list. We've got now, we have... currently a grades preschool through eighth grade, and there's 370 kids.
Yes.
Okay, how many years now?
We're in our seventh year of classes.
Wow. And so you've grown it, and how many kids is that about now?
370.
Oh, duh.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to listen instead of thinking of your next question.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, and we had to split it. We're just renting this house. We built a second story on the house, and then they have little, like, cubicles and little areas upstairs, but we're out of room. And our goal really is to... buy land so that we want to create school rooms out of shipping containers for several reasons. It's inexpensive. We can have solar panels on top for the air conditioning unit because we'd have to have that.
Right.
And then in order to make them self-sufficient, which is our goal, we want to have a farm. And we want to have, there's going to be a requirement that one adult from each child's family is going to have to come and work at the facility when we buy land.
Yeah.
And we are going to, through their work, they'll go through an orientation, and we're going to decide with them a direction of business development for themselves. So if they're interested in being a chicken farmer, we will put them in the chicken farming area, and they'll have to work there, and we will teach them about business planning and how to keep the chickens healthy and how many you need, and, you know, just really help them set up a business plan. Chicken farming, beekeeping, goats. We want to have lots of different classes, sewing. People have been donating sewing machines. We have several sewing machines.
So that's your grand vision.
Yeah.
What is it going to take to get that? What can people help and participate in this somehow?
Yes. $10 a month will help two kids have a teacher for a month.
Okay.
So we have a lot of people who just, you know, it's pretty easy to donate $10 a month. I mean, we spend that much at Starbucks, you know, in the morning.
Sure. That's
so,
a couple days.
That's a wonderful way to be involved and be a friend of the school with just a $10 a month donation. We also have classroom adoption opportunities for $200 a month. And we have several people who have adopted classrooms. That pays the teacher's salary, the bonus, some wire transfer fees, et cetera. And then our big fundraising goal coming up is land. And surprisingly, land is quite expensive in Port-au-Prince. The 20% of Haitians that have everything own all the land, and
right.
they can keep the prices pretty high. Right. So we need some big support there just to buy land. And we have programs coming up. We want to do science camp with the kids, music camp, dance. Coming up in January, I'm in plans to go back to Haiti with a wonderful young artist named Christiana Colorful Souls.
Yeah, she was on recently.
She was on your show recently, and she's going to come. And we just returned from Haiti on October 15th, and while we were there, we looked for particular walls in the community that the kids could paint. So,
we're looking forward to that. Big plans for that. So, if people want to reach out to you, is there a website or phone number?
Absolutely. The website is www.lwcshaiti.org. That's the website. We also have a Facebook page, which is Living Water Christian School Haiti. And there's a lot of really good updated pictures on the LWCS Facebook page. But the website, we're still working on. We need help with the website. I mean, we're looking for volunteers to help us social media and website.
So they can contact you through the website.
Yes.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the great work that you're doing. Thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we were just so excited to be here.
That's okay. Awesome. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. This is KX93.5. You've been listening to the Importance of Being show. And coming up next is Rainbow Radio. And that's it. Okay, KX93.5.